Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, presenting Black Urban America, one of the fewest Black-owned international radio programs that addresses solutions and issues for Black folks across America. Our lineup is, on Saturday, we have Provocative Thought with Carter Sneed. Tuesday evenings, we have myself with Black Urban America. And on Wednesday, Elephant Room with Shaka Zulu, aka Jamar Harris. And my name is Kenny Jones. Anyone?
Hold it now!
Sorry about that. That was supposed to go on 2 minutes ago. Once a month, on the second Tuesday each month, we have Ms. Ann Dillard with Healthy Relationships. On the third Tuesday of each month, as my co-host, we have T. Nathan, who discuss different political topics from a liberal aspect. And tonight, well, he's not here yet. We have Mr. Donald Scoggins that will be coming on every fourth Tuesday of the month. And he will be coming from an independent perspective, addressing different political issues. So everybody, that's the lineup. Now tonight, we were supposed to be discussing do Black folks depend on government programs? Hello, let me see if I can contact. Oh, here it is. Good evening. How you doing, Mr. Scoggins?
Oh, fine. You got my name now, huh?
Yeah. I was just doing my introduction, and I just said that are Black folks dependent or have been dependent or different government programs? I was just going to throw out some numbers real quick. All right. Of course, I was getting ready to get on this rant because you didn't come on yet. I just want to throw out something.
In 1968,
after Dr. King had died, 32% African Americans were below the poverty line. Now it's only 22% of Blacks below the poverty line, which is three times white. This is the thing that I didn't know. In 1960, 20% of Black families were headed by single women. Today it's 72%.
Right.
And I got these numbers from a Sharon Austin from University of Florida, and she said the only thing that really had proof since Dr. King's death is the expansion of the Black class ever go anywhere, if you could.
You're cutting out the expansion of the Black what?
Middle class.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Especially of the middle class and we could live anywhere we want if we could afford. So, and you know, a lot of bills has been put in place to address different economic issues. In fact, Dr. King had major bills that he wanted to present but would never accept it. A lot of economic bills, and the way Dr. King was going there at the end, the way Malcolm was really going, and that the solution is economics, which the United States, now they might just lose them, maybe some fair housing, but that doesn't really address the wealth issues. It really does address the economic issues. To me, or Black America. Okay, what you feel about that, Donald?
Well, the way I look at it is that the best way to improve our economic situation is to make, at least facilitate, blacks being more independent with their means of employment. As long as, now you mentioned the middle class blacks have expanded while the, I guess it's the poor has not expanded, I guess, or the below the poverty line has not expanded. I would dare say one reason why the black middle class has expanded is that when you look at the government programs, many more blacks are on are employed by the government. When I say the government, I meant through school system, federal government, local government, state government, or teachers and things like that. You know, we are not entrepreneurs as we were in the past. And if there's a hiccup,
very interesting that you would say this, because I think it was about a week ago I had these talk with some young folks, and I was explaining my childhood, you know, and where I used to sit every other Friday, my mom would drag me to the, they were called beauty parlors there, or whatnot. Okay, that's a black woman. Then across the street was George's Barbecue, owned by a black person. Next door was the cleaner, owned by a black woman. Next to the George's Barbecue was a bar owned by the same man. But right there were five businesses. Money left our pockets, went into a black person's pockets, which in turn, that money was spent in the neighborhood. It stayed in the neighborhood before it went to the bank.
I don't see, in
most cities, in most black neighborhoods across America, you know, I see other cultures taking advantage of our dollar. But we're not taking advantage of our own dollar.
Let me explain it to you. Now, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a town called Jersey City, New Jersey.
Okay, New Jersey. Okay. Well, I'm going to reflect back on the era of the Jim Crow day. I grew up in the, I'm born in 1945, so that gives you an idea of when I grew up, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the era of doing it. As I got older, I would say like in my 10, 11, 12 years old, I was doing the era, the ending of the so-called Jim Crow days, you know, in the late 50s and early 60s. And looking back on it, what has really, and I've heard people today say this, and I think they're true, I think what has hurt the black community was integration.
Yes.
And nobody really wants to say we should be segregated, but at the same
time, more ways than one,
integration,
too,
excuse me?
Yeah, in more ways than one, not just economically, but identity.
Identity. And see, segregation kind of forced us to be together. Now, you were talking about these other cultures and everything that have come into our community and seem to be doing things. But when you talk to those individuals, they don't necessarily want their economic might controlled by government. they want to be independent.
Right.
And everything. Where, and in the black community, and I hate to say this, but in the black community, I remember when I was much younger, like in my early 20s and everything, the ideal or the or you arrived if you got a good government job. You know, that was the point, was to get a good government job that'll take care of you.
At the post office.
Yeah, at the post office, or maybe being, or maybe working at the local social service agency, or working at something that deal. And you talk to some. I remember talking to some young people even today. Some of them, I say, well, what do you want to go into? Oh, I want to be a social worker. You know, I mean, everything. I mean, no disrespect to social workers, but a lot of that I mean, it's kind of like paper pushing bureaucratic type stuff, and they depend on having poor people, their jobs depend on having more, depend on poor people being around. If you eliminated poor people, then their jobs wouldn't be there, you know. So it's almost like a vicious cycle. You know, we're dependent because we are engaged in things that keep us dependent. That's one reason why when I run for office, one of the biggest things I want to push is a standalone trade school, so that at least these young men and women can have a trade doing something, whether it's painting their next door neighbor's bedroom, or either helping to fix a deck, or do something, you know, rather than have to. And like I said, I don't want to talk about the other ethnic groups, but, you know, then that culture, you know, they have people who are able to do those types of things, and we say that we, you know, we can't blame them for it. We just have to. It's something we need to advocate for ourselves, you know. And if we don't go out and vote, then when you get what you pay for, as they say, you know. So.
Yeah, but I just want to go back to the term that you were discussing called integration. I think integration had really, you know, hurt us tremendously. Not, I mean, in more ways than one. Threefold, culturally, identity, as well as economics. And I feel that we have to really try to get back to who we are, or what we have to put to keep that money in the neighborhood. Because it's like 1 cent out of a dollar stay in. Matter of fact, we really don't have any more black neighborhoods.
Right.
Not how we used to. Because of gentrification. Because of black flight.
Right.
And people being able, I think you have a group of African American professionals that don't even consider themselves African Americans or black anymore. You know, they're multicultural. And then our families are become. And again, I don't have nothing wrong with being mixture, you know, but our families are more mixed now. And I think this is right up there with the economic base. We're losing identity. I read an article about 10 years ago, and it said that the black man would not be the black man by 2060. You know, as the black man, as you was coming up, as black man I was coming up, that's dead. That's dead.
Right.
And I think also what you want to talk about, a lot of government programs has something to do with that too.
That's right. They have, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The government programs have something to do with it, but see, the problem with that is almost like, are you going to take that money that they're giving you, or are you going to be pure about it and say, well, I don't want to do that because that's going to make me dependent, you know, so you're going to struggle and go through hardships and everything so you can stay independent. Most people will just take the money and run, as they say, you know. So when you take the money and run, you kind of subscribe yourself to that's what you're going to be doing, and you're going to keep taking the money and run, you know. So and then what makes it even worse is that when you take the money and run, where you take the money to after that is not really benefiting you, because you look at who, if you're getting subsidized housing, for an example, who do you think owns the property that you're subsidizing with, that your rent is, that your subsidized rent is helping and all? So it's almost like a vicious circle where the people don't, that need to be helped are really not being helped. They're just kind of like a sieve, you know, they're just kind of a sieve for the money to come through, and it doesn't really it doesn't really settle with them. It's almost like a sieve, you know what I mean? You know, they're just kind of like a intermediary for the money for a little bit, and then it goes to somebody else who knows how to, who can make the money grow, I guess.
How did we get, how should I say, I don't want to say hook, man. I don't want to say sucker. How did we get so much influence that these government agencies were there to support us, to assist us, and to help us get to the next level? Like you said earlier, a lot of these programs was hoping that we stay at the level that we are currently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, some of the politicians, I don't, it's hard for me to believe, well, maybe it is a conspiracy type thing, but once you're in need of something, you're always going to have to go back for more. So the idea is to keep somebody in need. See, if you provide enough opportunities where they won't need you anymore, then what are you going to do? You know, see what I mean? I mean, you don't want to work yourself out of a job. So to keep from working yourself out of a job, you'll figure out a way how to keep these people to keep having to come back for some more. See.
You know, Trump, but talk about working your way out of the job. President Trump have people working for their food stamps now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Again, food stamps is for people that couldn't get a job or need assistance or what have you. Now, in order to get food stamps, you have to work for it. And you can't even make that much money, because if you make more than enough, you get cut off. I don't understand
right. That
logic.
Yeah. Well, let me just
talk
say this.
Government programs benefiting Black Americans.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think a government program should be an enabler for people to continue being in terrible circumstances. I don't believe that, because if you say a person has to work in order to get food stamps, then what about someone who can't work? Does that mean they're going to starve and everything? Or just what does it mean? Or also, if they get food stamps, they may feel that to keep getting these food stamps, they will have to kind of reduce their output in terms of income and everything. They say, well, I can't make so much because I get cut off, huh?
Yeah. The only one that's able to or eligible for food stamps is women with children. That's it.
Right. Or maybe elderly.
It used to be expanded. It used to be more than that. But unless you have a disability.
Or elderly people. Yeah. I think they can get it. You know, elderly people.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Well, elderly people can get food stamps, I'm sure.
But they don't get as much as a single person or a woman with kids.
Right. Right. But see, what happens is that when you give the food stamps to the woman with kids and everything, you know, some joker will be, you know, that's how the man comes into it. You know, he can't get the food stamps, so he winds up having married, he gets connected up with a woman and everything, and then that's how he gets his food stamps, or I get his subsistence, because he's tied in with her. So, and he can't report his income because she would get caught. It's almost like a vicious circle. So what he does, he gets money under the table or under the some kind of way. I don't know. The system is just rotten the way I see it. It's really, I would rather help somebody up front so they can stay a solid family unit than to come up with a way in which you're basically breaking up families in order to keep getting $200 or $300 a month or something. I don't think I think something is wrong there.
Yeah. Uh, let me, let let me switch to quick before I go on.
You there? Are you there?
No.
You there?
I just want to go
Hello?
Back to a couple of acts.
Okay.
Yes. I want to go back to a couple of acts. The Civil Rights Act of 1965. Do you remember the Civil Rights Act of 1965, Donald?
Yeah, I remember that. I think that was dealing with the voting rights, maybe?
Yeah, that was all.
Yeah.
No, voting rights was 1963.
63, okay,
the
that was
right,
when Martin Luther King got assassinated. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the Voting Acts and the Civil Rights Act, two different acts, right? The Civil Rights Act, that was Lyndon B. Johnson and King ensuring that was supposed to be our meal ticket, but it came to find out what they did included everybody, you know, Latinos, white women,
right.
Asians, everybody got a piece of pie except for the people that tended to get the whole pie.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they came up with that because they say they can't discriminate. You know, if one person gets it, then somebody else should be able to get it. You know, cause see, it was almost like I wouldn't call it the catch-22, but it's almost like if it was something that was created just for blacks, and they say, well, yes, being discriminatory or it's being,
it was supposed to be just for blacks.
To a certain race and everything. So
did they pay the Japanese for being locked up during World War II?
Right.
Did they pay the Japanese culture for being locked up in World War II?
Right. That time they did it, right.
Now, it goes to nobody else except for the Japanese.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Did they pay also Japan for dropping those two bombs on them?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, if it's okay, didn't they pay for the Holocaust?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and that was specifically for them. Now, how come when it comes to a black man, we can't be discriminated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Civil Rights Bill. Who was standing there next to Lyndon B. Johnson when he signed that Civil Rights Bill?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't no white women. It wasn't no Asians. It wasn't no Latino, even though Latinos, but they get jobs much easier than we do.
Right.
It wasn't no Indians from India. It wasn't Native Americans.
Right.
It was a black man and his lieutenant, Dr. Martin Luther King and Dr. Ralph Abernathy, standing
now
there.
Now you're talking in 1963?
No, that was the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
Talking about the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you about what led up to that signed the act. It was all the marches y'all were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was all the marches
right.
y'all were doing in the South.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be for, but and you want to know what culture made off as a bandit with the Civil Rights of 1965? You know who benefited the most? White women.
White women, yep. Mm-hmm.
White women.
Mm-hmm.
They're the CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
They are the physicians. They are the governors. No, they were supposed to be our in-route.
Mm-hmm.
Our in-group.
Well, you mentioned these things, but one thing I can say is that anything that we probably hadn't gotten and maybe we should have gotten, if you want to look at it that way, a lot of it is because we don't vote. You know, we don't vote in the numbers that we should vote in. And if we don't vote, then people feel that they don't have any allegiance to you, and we definitely don't give campaign money. So we're really a powerless people. We don't have any power because we don't exercise our voting rights the way we should.
Yeah, I
and a lot
I
of these
agree.
Policies at the local level. See, a lot of the things that you're talking about, if you don't vote at the local level, that's where a lot of these programs are actually implemented. They're implemented at the local level, but we don't vote sufficiently in sufficient numbers for our local elected officials. We just come out when it's the presidential election. But we have to start changing.
I have had people, as a matter of fact, I am still working on the roster. I have had people on here, on this show, that said that we need our own political party on when it comes to the local and state level.
Right.
Let's look at the Tea Party. How did the Tea Party start? They started in school auditoriums, town hall meetings, gymnasium, and guess what? Now they're in the White. Now they control the White House.
Right.
The Tea Party started in gymnasiums, town hall meetings, local levels, and it took them. And when they started the day after President Obama got elected.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The day after. And it took them about a good, I'd say, 3 years. It didn't take them that long, 3 years. And then they start running for local offices. Then they start going for state offices. Then they start getting the monies. Now the Republicans say, hey, join us. You know, then they start working or going for Congress. And this Tea Party was solely elected in the Congress and Senate to go against any bill Obama wanted to pass. Now, let's take a page for them. Not to stop a president, but let's take a page from them how they organize.
It's really not rocket scientists. If you vote, these things happen. But if you don't vote, who can you blame? You know.
So you try to say before we could do have something like the Tea Party, people got to register to vote.
No, I didn't say register to vote. You can register all you want, but if you register to vote and you don't vote, it doesn't make any difference. I'm just saying that people have to get out and vote. They can't just wait for the presidential election years. They have to vote in the off years, which is where a lot of your state and local...
And to be honest with you, I'd rather focus our attention right now on local...
I do, too, on local elections.
Local elections
where you have more control over, too, because when you vote in local elections, you're voting for the people who are charged with implementing certain programs. When you vote in these presidential and governor elections and even senatorial elections, your senators, they don't actually implement any programs. All they do is propose bills and things like that. But if you want to vote for somebody who has control over your school board or over your local county government or your local city government, that's at the local level, and these are the ones
which is very, very important. And again, that's how a lot of these educational programs get passed by us because A, we're not involved, B, we don't attend meetings, and three, as you say, we don't vote on it. Since you're on that, Don, how can we make people interested in their local politics?
The best way we can do that is to come up with an issue that's under the local government's jurisdiction. I don't mean advocate for something that you have to go to your state government for, or something you have to go to your congressman or your senator for, your U.S. senator for. I mean advocate for something that's in within the control of your local elected official, like your school board, your city council person, you know, that type of thing. And I think once we start advocating and getting things done at the local level, I think people will see how important it is. It's just like in my community, or at least here in Northern Virginia where I am, there's a big issue about land use development, where local land use issues are decided on by your local government in terms of whether you're going to have affordable housing in this location or whether you're going to be able to build certain types of establishments in a certain neighborhood. You may say, well, okay, well, our neighborhood doesn't have any supermarkets or something like that. Then you have to advocate for your local, make sure you have local people on your school board, or not school board, but people on your planning commission are the right ones that will advocate for some of these things being put there. And also, at the local level, that decide on what's the property taxes. The property taxes what funds a lot of these local these local initiatives. So that if you don't elect the right person to these local offices, that can affect what kind of taxes are raised, whether monies are raised, and if it is raised, where does it go from? Like we have in November, there's a proposed possibility of a bond referendum being put on the ballot, and the referendum is to raise $600 million for parks and recreation and things like that. It doesn't have anything to do with schools. It doesn't have anything to do with housing. People may think that we need better schools and we need more housing. So what do? You get people elected who are going to advocate for those things.
Well, sometimes, Donald, people do get, I don't want to say confused, but people do get elect the wrong official. And you can stand up and say anything. I always been of the mindset, what is your track record? What is your foundation?
Right.
Where do
right.
you come from? You know, and a lot of people just, I don't know. I don't want to say many of us are not politically astute in the political game, but I'm going to say many of us, you will go off of popularity, or really we vote the ticket. You know, in many townships, areas and cities, people go with the ticket, the popularity.
The assumption, you know, not to get too political, but the assumption is that if you vote for this party, they're going to do such and such. If you vote for that, if you vote for that party, they're not going to do such and such. So people don't read, they don't get well versed on issues themselves. They figure that they can count on the party to look after them, which in many cases that's not. In many instances, that's not the case. You got to be up on it yourself, because I know some elected officials, they are members of a certain party just because they know they can easily win in that particular party. And then once they get elected, they don't do anything because they know the people are not going to expect anything from them. At least they figure that the people can't go anyplace else. So therefore, they'll always get elected and they don't have to do anything. And see, so that's why sometimes, you know, I would advocate almost all local elections being independent, so that you can look exactly at the person's track record and not depend on the party that they're a member of. Because the assumption is that some parties are good for the community, and some parties are not. You know, so.
We have to become more educated.
Okay.
We have somebody on the line.
Yeah, hold it down.
Shaka, welcome.
Yeah, what's up with
Shaka?
You hear me?
Yes.
All right. How y'all brothers doing?
Fine.
All right.
All right. Hey, look, this is like the, I believe the second time I heard the brother. What's your name again, brother?
Don Scoggins.
Okay, I believe it's like the second or third time I spoke while you was on the show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I took some notes, right? I was over here going crazy on the other side. Like, y'all brothers were talking about some good stuff, man. And so I took some notes, right? So I want to start off just by saying the civil rights, when y'all was talking about civil rights or whatever, I had like an echo in the background a little bit. Let me see.
No, it's not me.
Yeah. It's not me.
I'm not on the phone. I'm on the laptop.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And so with the civil rights movement, particularly with the Immigration Act of 1964, that was the bill that was responsible for bringing people over here, foreigners over here, to take the jobs that the black folks could have had. And what stemmed from there, and I'm just sharing this with y'all, brothers. I know y'all already probably know most of this.
Right.
And then the affirmative action, which 66% of white women, they get their jobs today based off of the affirmative action. And so all of these things are strategic.
The affirmative action and the Civil Rights Act is like cousins. They are almost similar in context.
Exactly. And so if we Neely Fuller said something. Neely Fuller said history is not something that you could just feel good about, that you should feel good about. It's something that we should learn from the mistakes that our ancestors made. And that's very, very true, because people think because something happened in 1976, 1876, stayed back at 1876, 1976. And that could be so far from the truth is ridiculous. And I say that because when you understand the roots of where the civil rights movement came from, not the grassroots from the black side, but from the strategic white side, the political side, and that stemmed from the New Deal, when I spoke on that before, the New Deal with Roosevelt, because he had a meeting, Roosevelt had a meeting in South America and Brazil with Getulio Vargas. Getulio Vargas was the president in Brazil in the 1930s, and he had a meeting with, and I'm about to stop on this real fast, because, he had a meeting with Roosevelt, and he told him that he was doing the politics towards black people and the civil rights, they was doing it wrong. He was basically telling Roosevelt, if you want to do your civil rights the correct way, and if you want to destroy the black dollar, what you do, you integrate them. Mm. It took a minute for them to do it. Nothing can happen overnight. Mm. And so all civil rights was the replacement of the black male. Mm. And also white men suffer from this too. White men suffer from this too. It ain't just black men. We just at the bottom of the spaghetti pot.
Mm.
And so we suffer from that. So now you got women that got a mindset of I don't need a man for nothing. And I be trying to tell the sister, listen, we been drowned in the ocean. Let's just wipe each other off and brush each other off and dust the dust off of each other's shoulders. And let's just realize what happened to us so we won't maintain or create the same mistakes. But let's realize what happened. And I'm going to leave it on this before y'all can say what y'all want to say, is that there's nothing wrong with the school system. There's nothing wrong with the judicial system. The school system and the judicial system does everything that it was created to do. So that, you see what I'm saying? So we talking about reforming the system. A lot of these teachers and stuff talking about reforming the system, they might want to watch what they're talking about because it might cause them their jobs.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Because reformation, it comes at a loss. You have to sacrifice. And so that's what I wanted to speak on with you when you brothers were saying what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you made some good points, because once the way I look at it, once government gets involved in something, then it, to me, in many instances, it kind of abolish everything's up, because
just like the marijuana stuff that they in now, Monsanto.
Right.
That's all I got to say is Monsanto.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I don't know. I think the main thing is, just like someone said earlier, maybe we should. You almost need a separate party, but I really don't think you need a separate party. I just think we need people who are in the party to make sure that they, you know, they do some of the things we want them to do, you know.
Yes.
So that's what I, but that's what I think. And then all politics is local, too, because certain issues.
For those of us who do vote, you know, when I put my vote into somebody, I say, I am trusting you to represent my interests. But they don't, they don't. There's plenty of black folks who vote. But look at the Black Caucus. When is the last time you heard of the Black Caucus speaking out?
That's right, brother.
When? You know,
you say when what?
Just because somebody got scared doesn't mean they have interest at hand. You know,
right.
We got to start putting people in. Oh, like I said, we got to take out of the Tea Party. We start sending people, starting at the local level, that going to represent our interests, whether it be crime, whether it be education, whether it be park, whether
the LGBT did the same thing. The LGBT had $24 million, and they had their own agenda.
Hold for a second. It has to represent our interests, and that's what's failing. That's what's failing since the late 50s. Nobody is in office, especially on the national level, represent our interests.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's I don't know. I think that looking at some of these local elections, I think that if we can't get to the point where we start funding our own political figures, then I think we're always going to come up short. Because, as they say, he who has the gold makes the rules. Have you heard of that expression before?
Yes.
So that's where
our community. You know, that's how come Asia has so main power. The Hasidic Jews have so main power. The Indians for India has so many power.
Right.
They control their own dollars. Hell, Latino control more of their dollars than we do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because we're too reliant on the government. Who's going to give up their Lexus and their $500,000 or $600,000? Give up their good government job that's paying for their Lexus or their $600,000 or $700,000 house in the suburbs and everything. They'd rather stay dependent if they can get those creature comforts, you know.
And that's why the government when you look at immigration, it's over 3,000 immigrant Africans that come over in this country every month. But when you look at the Asian immigration rate, you see the rate of 4 million in the year 2000, but it's 15 million in 2015 and a little bit more than that in 2019. So what you're looking at by 2050, because when you look at the things like the birth dearth and things like that, they have projections, and I know you brothers already know, they got projections, and they got institutions to carry out these projections. Black folks just got a conversation. We the only group of people at the poker table with Uno cards. You know what I'm saying? And so we just got the conversation, but not the institutions for it to take place. And so it begins with a conversation, but it's just we don't understand what's going on, and we don't understand politics. That's what I call it, politics. And we don't understand how certain things work and what we bring, because the LGBT had an agenda, and they had $24 million, and they went to Obama, and I'm not saying he the best person or whatever, but they went to him with an agenda on top of their votes. The voting is the icing on the cake. Voting ain't the end-all, say-all. You got to have the money to get that person elected to hold that person accountable. You know what I'm saying? But black folks is like a side chick. Because we ain't even a side chick no more. The Mexicans are the side chick. We like the side chick now. You know what I'm saying? And it's like our votes is guaranteed if you're Democrat like Joe Biden running. The votes is guaranteed. So why do I got to fight for the black vote when the vote is guaranteed? You see what I'm saying? And so they're going to vote for us anyway. They ain't going to put no – because we don't understand. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, them died for this. and we still not us talking right now, but just us overall, we still entertaining the conversation of what they was talking about. If they was alive right now, they would thought like, okay, it's supposed to be in progress, you know. And what happens is is the education system. You take control of the education system and you indoctrinate the children. You got them talking about gay rights. You change the narrative up for, because look, I can't focus on gay rights when black folks is going through a thing as a group of people. I cannot separate what we're going through as a group of people with individual things. Yes, my heart go out to everybody else, child, people that's been molested. We might as well have midget rights while we at it. Get all vehicles one size shorter than what it is while you at it. Get midgets their rights while you at it. You see what I'm saying? And so they're changing the narrative just like they did in the civil rights movement, and they changed it to mean something else. You know what I'm saying? And so this is what I wanted to speak on like that.
But you know what, the way I look at it is that it's almost like many things. You have to compartmentalize. So let's break things down in terms of when you're trying to pursue something, break it down into chewable bites and everything. You see what I mean? Don't try to do everything all at once. You got to prioritize what's important. You may be 10 different things we should try to achieve, and we may not live to see everything. We may live to see two or three of them, but we should build on them and let each generation build on, you know, in other words, be strategic. This is what I noticed the Asians and even the African immigrants, they come over here realizing that they themselves may not achieve a certain amount, but they make it so that their children
will be in a
position to achieve some of these things, you know, and then their children will even do better, you know. So I think that, unfortunately, and this is something I don't really that I don't think is very helpful, is that some of our people who are considered black leaders, they will either incite, or either they will get people who are really not in a position to do anything feeling bad about this condition or blaming somebody else for their condition because they're not even in a position to do it. Let's give it a good example. They talk about taking black, the immigrants or the illegal immigrants or undocumented folks taking jobs away from from black men or from the black community. I talked to some of those people over here, and they are taught in their country. They are taught the trades in their country. It's just that because of the political system over there and violence and everything else, they can't practice it. But our young people over here, a lot of them can't even drive a nail or can't even, if you wanted them to come in and paint a room for you, they wouldn't even know how to do that. You know,
and they took the trades out of the schools.
Yeah, they took the trades out of the schools, so we can't.
And they put them in job corps.
Yes, yeah, and they do it in the job corps. They should have done it in the high school, you know, go into public high school to do that. And see, the job corps is nothing but another government program
started by Kennedy. The job corps program.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a waste of money. If they had trained people properly in high school, maybe 10th, 11th, 12th grade, they wouldn't need a job corps. But the job corps is but more bureaucracy that people that people exploit, you know. And who do you think votes these people in to keep this exploit? I used to work, and I hate to say, I'll tell you this, I used to work in the government, so I know how the government works. The object of the government is to keep being in need, you know. The government doesn't want to see people get off of welfare, because if they're off of welfare, there's a big bureaucracy that would just crumble.
It's a poverty industry. It's a poverty industry.
There you go, the poverty industry. Right, yeah. And you go, like, I'm in the D.C. area where they got all these conferences and all these think tanks and all this and all this that, and they get all this money studying poverty, studying poor people. You know, they study, you know, and these people are doing the studying, PhDs and all that, you know, making big money and teaching courses. And all. I mean, it's nothing but a big, you know, to me, it's just like a vicious circle, and the people who are there studying and everything don't get the benefit of all this, you know, because they're never going to be, they're not trained right in the first place. That's the reason why I want a trade school, so that helps some people get independent, you know.
That's why schools should. They don't teach entrepreneurship and
they
things
don't.
Like
they
that.
Don't. They don't treat entrepreneurship. That's what. See, if we have this trade school, I would have courses that lead people towards being an entrepreneur. Even if you don't wind up being another Bill Gates or somebody like that, that doesn't mean that you can't have your business or you can be involved. You may even be involved working for somebody else, but that'll make you more attractive to get a job with somebody because you know these things.
And that's why we have to show our children the difference in the economy, because the economy
right.
is shifting from an agricultural to an industrial to a service to a technological
right.
economy.
Right.
And so my children, like I take them to science fairs from
mm-hmm.
time to time, and I teach them about robotics and stuff like that at
right.
an early age, and to teach them trades that they need to have, and what do you want to do, because school is overrated, college is overrated. Yes, we
right.
need some brothers and sisters to go to college.
Right.
Yes, we
mm-hmm.
need some scientists, we really do. But at the same time, they don't have no seniority.
Right.
But
you know what? You know the issue in my community, in my county, they have something called the Rural Crescent, which is a swash of land in the county that many people want to keep kind of rural, you know, and not develop and everything. But the people who own the property, they want to develop because they said farming is not. It's not profitable for them anymore, you know, and their kids don't want to come back to the farm and do the farming
yeah.
and all like that. And guess what? We're
and
getting
it's
a
disincentive
about,
for being a farmer now.
Excuse me?
It's a disincentive for being a farmer now. With Monsanto
yeah,
and the seed and how they put them out of business, you can't collect rainwater and certain, like, it's
right.
crazy.
Right. But see,
also,
you know, we got a lot of these young people that
Africa,
are out of wheat. But
also,
to me, I look at it another way. I think that we should even teach farming in some of these schools so that you can teach
you're
farming in a
Montana,
new way, you know, the modern type.
Nebraska, the Montana, Nebraska, Wyoming, they're here, but
right.
we're not here, we're not in a farming community. Even parts
right.
of the South, Alabama, Mississippi. That,
even if we taught it, in our schools and everything, that doesn't mean that these young people can't go out there and get a job and everything, because a lot of the older people, and I hate, you know, most of them tend to be white who have these farms and all, they can't find people who want to work the farms, you know. So we
the
have a lot of young
farming community is suffering.
Right.
You're
right.
Of China. A lot of the contract, we, like 25 ago, we were growing wheat and corn in the United States.
Yep.
Now,
right.
What you call it, imports.
Mm.
GMO.
Now, the corn.
GMO stand for God, move over.
Right.
In fact, about 5 years ago, I don't know if they still do it, and 5 years ago, they were paying farmers not to grow crops.
Mm. Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they
yeah.
still do that.
Yeah,
and now here in Duplin County, North Carolina, and North Carolina is over 9 million people in the state, but it's over 10 million pigs. One pig is equivalent to producing feces that 10 people will. So these 10 million pigs will produce, they will have feces that's equivalent to 100 million. That's like the whole East Coast flushing their toilet stools, and they come up into North Carolina. Why do I say that? Because in Duplin County, there's so many people suffering from asthma, all types of shit from the spray and the chemicals and the damn the feces and the damn water and stuff like that, you know, because it's all about money. And the farming industry is totally destroyed. The Monsanto's with these seeds and the brother that just got that cancer from the Monsanto seeds, and he came back, he sued them from over $100 million, you know. Now we die faster from a drive-thru than a drive-by.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well,
I want to get off the subject too much, but since we're on the agriculture and the eating habits, which is very important, which is a lot of political ties, you'd be surprised how strong is the food industry, the fast food industry lobbyists in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
You live in that area,
yep.
John. You know about the
right.
lobbyists?
The USDA. They work for the USDA.
I'm going to tell you something.
You know how North Korea is dangerous to us. You know how Chinese get. McDonald's is in North Korea. McDonald's is.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm not lying. McDonald's is in North Korea, and McDonald's is in a lot of countries that the United States are not have good standards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about Burger King, but McDonald's is over there in China.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And North Korea.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now I'm just telling you.
See, it's, well, you know, you're talking. Well, look where China is. Also, they're in China's. I mean, not China. Yeah, China. Look where they're. They're just about buying up Africa and everything. You know, Nigeria and places like that. They're very discreet.
That's post World War II.
They're
in
very strategic.
II, the Chinese. The Chinese is they've been there since World War II. Yeah, you gotta remember, Chinese and the United States fought side by side against Japan, and that was one of the payoffs. Give us some of those donkeys over there. Give us all those. You know how they talk about us behind our backs. Give us all those dark countries over there. It used to be but the European countries. Now there's a lot of Asian. Matter of fact. You want to know who got the #1 building contract in Africa, all of Africa? China. There's a lot of Chinese companies over there making billions.
Right.
And then where they bought, and you got to remember, the British was over in there, and the British and the Chinese always been friends, and the British brought the Chinese on board in Africa. If you look historically, also Islamic countries have benefited. I should not say Islamic countries. Arab countries have benefited tremendously with contracts in Africa, where their culture is almost embedded. Their culture is almost embedded with a lot of African cultures over there.
Right. Yep, I agree.
Well, we got a couple minutes left, folks. I think this is introductory co-host, monthly co-host, Donald. And just tell the people about what you're doing right now.
Tell people about what?
What you're doing right now. You're practicing what you're preaching. Tell the people what office you're running for and everything.
Yeah, well, right now I'm running for chairman of the Board of Supervisors in Prince William County, and that is a local government position, and it's the chairman of the board, meaning that the governing body of the county. We have six or seven representatives, and then they have the chairman, and I'll be the chairman. The chairman runs at large in the county, and others run for in their individual districts. And some of the things we talked about tonight, I plan to promote when I'm on the board. Biggest thing is I want to advocate for a standalone trade school, because the county is, you know, they're coming up with their 14th high school they're planning on, and we still don't have a standalone trade school, which I think is very much needed. We need to almost look at, look at the curriculum that these schools have. I think we need, at an early age, like the gentleman said, we need to talk about entrepreneurship, because
the Japanese do, the Indians do, and we got 60 seconds of time. So I'm going to on the fourth Tuesday, I look forward to the political conversation. I love talking politics. That's a good thing.
I do too. Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed you having me.
I'll see you next month.
Thank you very much, brother.
Tomorrow night, Shaka.
Hey, give the gentleman.
I love you, brother.
Let the gentleman know how to reach me and everything.
I talk to him at least once a week. No problem.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'll see y'all.
I'll see you.
All right.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Donald E. Scoggins. Try to get me on Facebook, and we'll be in touch.
All right, brother.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Okay, that's it for this week. I see you next week. I am we because we are because I am. Everybody, have a good night.